When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Talkspace, the leading virtual therapy provider, is encouraging people to talk it out in therapy. By talking or texting with a supportive, licensed therapist at Talkspace, you'll gain insights, discover truths, and experience breakthroughs that will improve how you live and how you feel. With Talkspace, just answer a few questions online, and you'll be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, whenever you feel most at ease. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members only pay a $25 copay or less. No insurance? No problem. If you want to make progress toward a mentally healthier place, Talkspace is here for you. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. Early Mormon women blessed by the laying on of hands. If that practice returned, would that be good enough for the ordained women movement? Nancy Ross and Sarah Hanks will answer that question in just a moment. I just want to remind you all, please sign up for our newsletter at gospeltangents.com/newsletter. You can get some inside scoops and find out who our next interviews are going to be. I think you'll be very impressed. Now back to our conversation.
So a couple of years ago, I was part of a group of scholars who did a couple of big surveys. One was of 50,000 Mormons, and 90% of them. So we asked the question, if the prophet was announced tomorrow or the next general conference, you know, that they were going to ordain women, would you accept that? You know, and 90% said yes, that they would accept that. Mm-hmm. You know, even if the numbers for people expressing a desire for the ordination of women were different.
Right.
And I think, you know, when you look at the Community of Christ case, and I've heard a lot of people talk about this in the short time that I've been in Community of Christ, which is that the upper leadership had done their own prep work for preparing themselves for the ordination of women so that they could make it okay for them, but they hadn't done a lot of prep work and advanced work for preparing the whole church
right.
for that. And that when a similarly big change came in 2013, when the World Church said that, you know, national conferences could vote to, you know that they were going to, the World Church Organization decided that they would allow for full inclusion of LGBT people. They did a lot of advanced work, and they created ways for congregations to disagree. So mm-hmm. A congregation can be in faithful disagreement over the issue of full inclusion of LGBT people, and they did a lot of advanced work in a lot of different places, so that when the vote happened, yes, not everybody was happy about it, mm-hmm. and they did vote for the full inclusion. But there was an acceptance that they could all be one church. And I'm sure that there were people who left.
Sure.
But it wasn't the numbers of people who left in the 1980s because they did all this advanced work. And my guess is that, should another prospect of another really big social change kind of happen in the church, that, again, they would do a lot of advanced legwork. And how can we get buy-in? How can we get people on board? How can we educate? How can we show that this is different? And I've talked to Locke Mackay about this, and he's like, you know, if we could go back to 1984, you know, we would be talking about this differently, and we'd be doing different kinds of outreach work mm-hmm. so that there wouldn't be that same kind of schism at the end.
Right.
And so I think that they have learned from their own processes of change, how to create smoother change and how to facilitate change, not only at the higher decision making, not only at a decision making level or with a decision making body, but with the whole church. And I think that that's been an important lesson for them. You know, the change for the full inclusion of women was a huge change, but now they know how to make change better and deeper and in ways that the result of that will be more inclusive. And I think that's, you know,
yeah.
important lessons to learn.
Yeah.
Are you still a member of Ordained Women?
I mean, I still have a profile up on the website, you know, and I'm still supportive of the
organization.
You're being
ordained this Sunday anyway.
That's right,
so.
Yeah.
So it's a good point.
Ordained woman.
Yes, ordained women. We're doing it. Yeah.
So my question is, what if, actually two questions. Number one, what if, say, October General Conference, President Nelson got up and said, okay, we're going to go back to the idea that women can lay hands on the sick, like they used to do, even in the early 20th century.
Right. Yes.
How would that be good enough to ordain women, or is it? Do you think that women still need to be ordained to priesthood office?
Do you want to comment?
I would say nothing less than full inclusion and full opportunity for every member of the church would be quote unquote sufficient. Any step in the direction of progress on any subject in any community is great. Any step, great. But
so you would welcome
that? Oh, I would welcome that completely. I would be so excited about that. I would be overjoyed. But in terms of, you know, Ordain Women as an organization, I think they chose their name very specifically. It's Ordain Women, not like give women, I mean, it would be a very long name, but it's not like give women more opportunities. It's like Ordain Women. I remember shortly after Ordain Women was launched, Kate Kelly did a radio interview somewhere in the Salt Lake area, and a caller asked, you know, so what, like, you won't be satisfied until women can be the prophet? And she was like, yeah, nothing less than full inclusion at every level is gonna be like enough. So until women and men and black people and brown people and white people and LGBTQ people, until everybody has the same opportunities before them for inclusion in the church and for opportunities to access power and minister and all those things, until that's what we see, there's still room.
And
room to grow.
I agree with all of that. Absolutely. Because the goal here with the ordination of women is to make the church, the way I see it, is to make the church like a safer, better place for women. And it would be awesome if there was an acknowledgement that women could give blessings in the open. That mm-hmm. would be great. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't make the church fully a safer place for women. That doesn't put more women on decision-making councils where women's needs and a diversity of women's needs are acknowledged and accounted for in a decision-making process.
Right.
Then the LDS Church, ordination and priesthood power are paramount. So women don't really achieve full equality unless they have access to this.
There is no separate but equal.
There's really not. There's not.
All right, but you would welcome the if women could start doing blessings of the sick or whatever.
Yes, and we know a lot of women who do that.
Yeah, we do, and it would be amazing if it could be.
Yeah.
I mean, I would, on a personal note, like I think of my aunts and my grandmas and my mom and the women that I know who are mm-hmm. so faithfully LDS, who they would never think of doing something that the church wasn't okay with. If they could have that opportunity and to do it in a way that was like in a church meeting, like that, I mean, tears, like it would be incredible.
Well, let me ask this, because I've actually got a couple of sisters and we've talked about this and they're like, I don't want the priesthood.
Sure.
I don't want any part of that. I've got, in fact, the one sister says, I've got enough to do. I don't want any more responsibility.
Yeah.
How would you respond to that?
I think it would depend on the situation, but I think on one hand, I'd be like, okay, great. Like, I understand that you don't need to have something that you don't want, but it also doesn't square that sort of response that I hear so often from women in the church doesn't, it's very much at odds with the way that they talk about what priesthood is for their husbands or their sons or their brothers. They talk about the priesthood as something that assists them in the work that they have to do. They talk about priesthood as a way to exercise God's power and to bless the people that they love. Mm-hmm. You know, I go back to, you know, the early days of my marriage with my husband and health problems that we had and wanting a child that we couldn't have yet. My husband was able to give me blessings mm-hmm. of comfort and to speak to me with a voice that was his, but also had God in it. And I couldn't do the same for him. He was hurting too. He had to go to a home teacher or the bishop or his dad. And those are important relationships, but I wanted to be able to do that for him. And I would want to be able to do that for my kids too, to give them comfort or to show them, to tell them what I think God would want them to hear. And so when women say, oh, I don't want it, oh, I already have enough to do, oh, the extra responsibility, I wonder if they, you know, if you take the average Mormon woman who gives that response, would she want her son to feel that way about the priesthood? Would she want her son coming up at the age of 12 to say, oh, no, thanks, I have enough responsibility, I don't want that responsibility? Or would she want them to welcome the opportunity to exercise the priesthood? Like, she would probably want her son to welcome that. Why would she want any different for herself or for her daughter? That's the contradiction that I see. Mm-hmm. If a woman doesn't want the priesthood, or a man doesn't want the priesthood, like, don't have it. Like, I think that's a perfectly valid thing.
So, and that's interesting, because I know in the early days of the LDS Church, I've talked to a few historians, and they said that it was pretty typical for a man, mm-hmm. when he was baptized, he was immediately ordained. And that's mm-hmm. pretty much, we followed that for, you know, going around 200
yeah.
years. But it doesn't sound like that happened in the community of Christ. Not everybody is right. just ordained. Is
it's
that correct?
Not everybody is ordained. No. Right. Ordination is something that is a particular calling. So leaders, usually local leaders, people who know people well, will sense that maybe somebody has a call. And so there is no, like, blanket ordination of everyone.
Right.
Ordination isn't automatically given out. Yeah. And children are never ordained.
Yeah, so how old do you have to be?
You need to be an adult.
You need to be an adult, so 18.
Yeah, that's my understanding, yes. Yeah.
Okay. So you weren't immediately ordained?
No.
Upon baptism?
No.
So it's taken a year and a half?
Yeah, it's taken a year, and it doesn't happen for everyone.
Right.
Right, but it's also not something that... So, yes, I will be ordained on Sunday, and that's something that's happening, and I'm very excited about it, but, like, I do all kinds of things for my congregation, up to, like, short of, like, blessing and passing communion,
mm-hmm.
everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is available to me except for the, like, sacramental stuff.
Right.
And so it's not like, oh, I can't make decisions or help facilitate decision making within
Until
my congregation.
You have the priesthood,
right.
Yeah.
It's like I've been doing all these things, which is so much more than I was able to do as an LDS woman. You know, I have the key to the building, you know,
well,
like
the
glorious key of the building. And I help facilitate, you know, decision making, and I organize stuff, and, mm-hmm. and no one's like, you don't have the authority to do that.
Right, right.
Right, because that's just what I've been doing, and I have enjoyed that sense of just ministering, you know, without priesthood, and soon I will have that, and that will be an additional thing that I have, and so that I will be able to kind of bless and pass communion and do some other things as well. But I've been able to do a lot, and much more than I was able to do previously as, you know, a Relief Society sister, and that makes me feel happy and valued, included without ordination.
Well, it sounds like you don't miss Relief Society either.
I don't. I think Relief Society can be really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've had moments in my life when Relief Society was really awesome and wonderful and good. But it's not that way for everyone, and it isn't necessarily that way consistently for people.
Right.
So this is another question I have, because I have to say, I don't think I'm the target demographic for feminist Mormon housewives. Is that right?
You might be.
I mean, there are a few men.
There are men in the book.
Yeah. There's a few men in there, and I tried to read those. But I do want to ask you your favorite essays in a minute. But you know, Lisa created Feminist Mormon Housewives as a place, I think, more for women
sure,
than for men. Not
sure.
that men can't come.
Right.
Sure.
That's exactly right.
But
yeah.
men
it's for
are not,
women, but men are women.
Yeah. But I don't... And I've read Feminist Mormon Housewives. If there's somebody
yeah.
points out a post, I'll read it. But it's not... I'm not the target audience,
that's
really.
True.
Yep. So it does seem like, you know, with Relief Society, it's a place for women. With Feminist Mormon Housewives, it's a place for women. I mean,
mm-hmm.
that's
mm-hmm.
who it is.
Yeah.
So, is there a place for Relief Society and ordination in the LDS Church?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's how Relief Society was set up.
Well, how come the Community of Christ got rid of Relief Society?
Because it saw Relief Society as, I think, a narrower group, and in many ways to kind of support polygamy. And so, you know, like, so they don't do that. But I don't think they're less effective because they don't do that.
Right. There are different ways to set up churches that can all be effective and all have their gifts. And Community of Christ decided that wasn't, didn't fit with their goals exactly. Yeah. But it's not hard for me to imagine a setting where a church would have a group like Relief Society that was very specifically about women, and also have opportunities for people of any gender to, you know, to be ordained.
Right. And it's also important to point out that the whole history of the Relief Society wasn't inclusive of all or most women, and that it was only, I think, in the 1970s when all women were seen as being automatically part of Relief Society.
Yeah.
So the Relief Society has its own history, and I think that there are some complicated pieces of that, too.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
right,
definitely.
Even, you know, yeah.
So, but you could see, I'll write this to you, Sarah. You could see the LDS Church ordaining women and maintaining Relief Society, not a separate quorum, or would the elders?
I mean, I don't know how. I think there are any number of ways that it could be organized, but I have room in my imagination for a church that still had a third hour class for women, and a third hour class for men, and a third hour class for young kids, and also made room for ordination.
The elders, the male elders meet together, and the female elders meet together.
Maybe.
But Sarah, I can envision a church that's only 2 hours and women get ordination. I'll one-up you on my vision.
Can you imagine? Yeah, I mean, I think there's value to be had in gender-specific spaces. And so maybe they would rename the class so it wasn't the elders and the other elders,
the male,
you know?
Elders and
I don't know
elders.
What they would do or how they would do it. But, I mean, I think that there would, even if ordination was offered to everybody on equal playing field, there would still be value in women meeting together and in men meeting together and in, you know, elderly people of whatever group meeting together, you know, to kind of share and relate with people who understand a lot of what your experience has been.
Absolutely. And I would also say that the way in which the LDS church divides groups of people into like men and women also leaves out a lot of other people.
It does.
And it can create difficulties for trans people, for gender non-binary people.
It definitely does.
And that, you know, not focusing so much on a kind of male-female binary also leaves space for additional inclusion to be like, you know, all adults have the potential to be ordained, and everybody has these different gifts, and they can all contribute to our church communities and help build the kingdom of God.
Yeah. And what if there were options for people to go to different classes or whatever based on their interest and not so much on like whatever category they fit into? There's lots of ways it could be.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Nancy and Sarah. In our next and final conversation with them, we'll talk about their favorite essays. What's it like to blog at Feminist Mormon Housewives?
And in many ways, the kind of raw expose of like emotion and complication of the way we feel about the lives we live is one of the most beautiful things about the book.
Yeah.
Like, and to acknowledge all the difficulty and complexity, you know, if we want to be like, oh, well, Mormon women are like this and their lives are like this. And I think that what the book and the essays in the book be like, Mormon women are all like this and their feelings are about that are all like this. You know,
I hope you enjoyed that short clip from our next interview. If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please go to our patreon.com/gospeltangents and subscribe for just $5 a month. If you'd like a transcript of this, please click the yellow subscribe button at gospeltangents.com, and I'll send you this and all future transcripts. Also, if you'd like a paperback like we've got here, those are available at our website at amazon.com. Just do a search for Gospel Tangents. Please get all updates at our Facebook page at facebook.com/gospeltangents. We're also on Twitter at gospeltangents. You can also get transcripts individually at our website, gospeltangents.com/shop. Finally, make sure that you subscribe on our Apple Podcast page. Just do a quick search for Gospel Tangents there and give us a 5-star review while you're at it. Thanks again for listening. Your support helps create more Mormon history classes and podcasts such as this, and so I really appreciate you listening. Please please share with your friends.
Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some more of our great videos. Thanks again.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.